Great Danes, like most of the big breeds, are usually placid animals, and the bitch didn't move as I took her temperature. She lay on her side, listening contentedly to the squeals of her family as the little blind creatures climbed over each other to get at the engorged teats. "Yes, she's got a slight fever, and you're right about the discharge." I gently palpated the long hollow of the flank. "I don't think there's another pup there, but I'd better have a feel inside just to make sure. Could you bring me some warm water soap and a towel, please?" As the door closed behind Harold, I looked idly around the gunroom. It wasn't much bigger than a cupboard, and since another of Harold's idiosyncrasies was that he never killed anything, was the void of guns. The glass cases contained only musty-bound volumes of Blackwood's Magazine and Country Life. I stood there for maybe 10 minutes, wondering why the old chap was taking so long. Then I turned to look at an old print on the wall. It was the usual hunting scene, and I was peering through the grimy glass and wondering why they always drew those horses flying over the stream with such impossible long legs, when I heard a sound behind me. It was a faint growl, a deep rumble, soft but menacing. I turned and saw the bitch rising very slowly from her bed. She wasn't getting to her feet in the normal way of dogs. It was as though she were being lifted up by strings somewhere in the ceiling, the legs straightening almost imperceptibly, the body rigid, every hair bristling. All the time she glared at me unblinkingly, and for the first time in my life I realized the meaning of blazing eyes. I had only once seen anything like this before, and it was on the cover of an old copy of The Hound of the Baskervilles. At the time I had thought the artist ridiculously fanciful. But here were two eyes filled with the same yellow fire, and fixed unwaveringly on mine. She thought I was after her pups, of course. After all, her master had gone, and there was only this stranger standing motionless and silent in the corner of the room, obviously up to no good. One thing was sure. She was going to come at me any second, and I blessed the luck that had made me stand right by the door. Carefully, I inched my left hand towards the handle as the bitch still rose with terrifying slowness, still rumbling deep in her chest. I had almost reached the handle when I made the mistake of making a quick grab for it. Just as I touched the metal, the bitch came out of the bed like a rocket and sank her teeth into my wrist. I thumped her over the head with my right fist, and she let go and seized me high on the inside of the left thigh. This really made me yell out, and I don't know just what my immediate future would have been if I hadn't bumped up against the only chair in the room. It was old and flimsy, but it saved me. As the bitch, apparently tiring of gnawing my leg, made a sudden leap at my face, I snatched the chair up and fended her off. The rest of my spell in the gunroom was a sort of parody of a lion-taming act, and would have been richly funny to an impartial observer. In fact, in later years, I have often wished I could have had a cine-film of the episode. But at the time, with that great animal stalking me round those few cramped yards of space, the blood trickling down my leg, and only a rickety chair to protect me, I didn't feel a bit like laughing. There was a dreadful dedication in the way she followed me, and those maddened eyes never left my face for an instant. The pups, furious at the unceremonious removal of their delightful source of warmth and nourishment, were crawling blindly across the bed and bawling, all nine of them at the top of their voices. The din acted as a spur to the bitch, and the louder it became, the more she pressed home her attack. Every few seconds she would launch herself at me, and I would prance about stabbing at her with my chair in best circus fashion. Once she bore me back against the wall, chair and all. On her hind legs she was about as tall as me, and I had a disturbing close-up of the snarling, gaping jaws. My biggest worry was that my chair was beginning to show signs of wear. The bitch had already crunched two of the spars effortlessly away, and I tried not to think of what would happen if the whole thing finally disintegrated. But I was working my way back to the door, and when I felt the handle at my back, I knew I had to do something about it. I gave a final, intimidating shout, threw the remains of the chair at the bitch, and dived out into the corridor. As I slammed the door behind me and leant against it, I could feel the panels quivering as the big animal threw herself against the wood. I was sitting on the floor with my back against the passage wall, pants round my ankles, examining my wounds, when I saw Harold pass across the far end, pottering vaguely along with a basin of steaming water held in front of him and a towel over his shoulder. I could understand now why he had been so long. He had been wandering around like that all the time. Being Harold, it was just possible that he had got lost in his own house. Or maybe he was just worrying about his four aways. Back at Skeldale House, I had to endure some unkind remarks about my straddling gait, but later in my bedroom the smile left Siegfried's face as he examined my leg. "Right up there, by God!" He gave a low, awed whistle. "You know, James, we've often made jokes about what a savage dog might do to us one day. But I tell you, boy, it damn nearly happened to you.